This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town. Chicago, Chicago, I will show you around. I love it, bet your bottom dollar you lose the blues in Chicago, Chicago, the town that Billy Sunday couldn't shut down. On State Street, that great street, I just want to say, they do things they don't do on Broadway. They have the time of their life. I saw a man, he danced with his wife in Chicago, Chicago, my hometown.
Oh yeah, nobody could sing that song like Frankie. Chicago, Ed's Chicago, rubbing it in. The Bucks and the Bears. We had a chance to win that game, Ed, until the very end. Anyway, good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, a long-suffering Bears fan. And along with my buddy Big Ed Davis, a Bucks fan, we thank you so much for joining us. It is Monday, September the 18th, and we got a lot going on. We're going to be talking in a few minutes with Sean Higgins of the Competitive Enterprise Institute about the United Auto Workers strike, which has entered its fourth day today. How much longer will it go? And is it forcing union workers to face some rather hard realities? We're going to talk about that with Sean, so stay tuned. And speaking of shutdowns, the government runs out of money in 12 days unless Congress comes up with some kind of a deal. We're going to take a look at all of that. And did you hear about this? Hunter Biden is suing the IRS. Yes, indeed, he is suing the IRS. We will give you the motive and the details in just a few minutes. And in our ultimate top 10, we got a good one, we think. The top 10 states with the longest emergency room waiting times. You ever sat in a... Oh, you don't want to sit in an emergency room of a hospital, ever, if you can get away with it. So stay tuned for that towards the end of the show. By the way, we are sponsored. Freedom Works is sponsored by Andrews Master Barbershop. Guys, for the best haircut in Tampa Bay, I have found the place. It is the Fountain of Youth. Andrews Master Barbershop in Dunedin in the Overcast Plaza. They are open Tuesday through Saturday. Please call first for your appointment. Great haircut, great price. 727-733-3773. And Arbor Life Tree Service. You got any kind of a tree problem, you want trees, you want to get rid of trees, you want stumps taken away, whatever it has to do with trees, it's Arbor Life. Call for a free estimate, 727-330-1999. So, in 12 days, here we go again, right? The government shuts down. Now, what happens when the government shuts down? Don't worry about it. They shut down a few parks. I actually would prefer we shut down the government because that means that we cut back a little bit on the spending. And we send a lot of people home that we don't need that much in Washington who are taking our taxpayer dollars. Lawmakers in both the House and the Senate set to return to Capitol Hill this afternoon with less than 2 weeks hashing out some sort of a deal to fund the government past the end of the month, September 30th. Now, if Congress cannot agree on spending priorities for the next fiscal year, or at least on a stopgap spending patch, which is known as a continuing resolution, they risk sending the government into a partial shutdown. That means you won't be able to go see the moose in Yosemite National Park. I know that it's breaking a lot of hearts. I can see the tears flowing from Big Ed. Some GOP groups are discussing a 30-day stopgap resolution with a condition of a border security measure attached to it. Now, maybe that's a good idea. Here's the deal. The way the media will portray it, it's the Republicans that want to stop the government. They always do that. And the Republicans know that. So it puts the Republicans in a bind. They know that we should cut back on the spending, and Republicans are trying to cut back on the spending. But they also know they're going to look bad in front of the people of the country because the media and the Democrats are going to say, look, look, they don't want you to get your Social Security, the Republicans don't want you to get your Social Security check or your welfare checks. First of all, you will get them. Those will not stop. None of the payouts to people from the government is going to stop, so don't worry about that. It's all a big ruse. Speaker Kevin McCarthy apparently is working overtime, according to what I'm reading here, to get his conferences to a consensus to avoid a shutdown. Now remember that the Congress, the House, is where funding bills start. So that's why the press and the Democrats can blame the Republicans, because the Republicans have the majority, and the Speaker of the House is a Republican, and they're the ones that have to come up with some sort of a stopgap spending bill. Or here's the deal. They've actually sent spending bills over to the Senate, and the Senate is not picking them up and doing anything with them. It's almost like the Democrats, who control the Senate, are trying to make the Republicans look bad. So there is so much politics going on with this whole thing. It's a shame. It really is. So, did you hear about this, Ed? Hunter Biden, his attorneys have filed a lawsuit against the IRS today. And you know what they say in the suit? They say that IRS agents have targeted and sought to embarrass the president's son.
I don't think he needs any help in that department.
I don't think he does either.
Quit leaving his cocaine in the White House.
Exactly. Biden's filing cites two major examples in, you remember those two IRS agents, Gary Shapley and Joseph Ziegler? Well, they cite in the lawsuit those two guys, the two whistleblowers, who claim the IRS mishandled certain aspects of the investigation into Hunter Biden. Biden's lawsuit seeks the court to declare that the IRS, quote, willfully, knowingly, under and or by gross negligence, unlawfully disclosed Mr. Biden's confidential tax information. In addition, Biden demands $1,000 in damages for, quote, each and every unauthorized disclosure of his tax returns, unquote, including disclosures that happened after the fact. They go on to say, Biden is the son of the president. He has all the same responsibilities as any other American citizen, and the IRS can and should make certain that he abides by those responsibilities. Similarly, Mr. Biden has no fewer or lesser rights than any other American citizen, and no government agency or government agent has free rein to violate his rights simply because of who he is. This guy,
do you remember that phrase?
Is leaving a trail of trouble no matter where he goes, and he has the chutzpah to sue because two IRS agents are called on the carpet to explain what was going on in the probe into Hunter Biden's gun violations and his tax cheating. I'm sorry, Ed, what were you going to say?
He should remember that phrase about talking about being a no less or no more than any other citizen when he's asking for a plea deal.
Exactly right.
And don't drop the big guy's name, you know?
Yeah. This is really, this is the ultimate chagrin. Complete chutzpah on his part. We'll see where it goes. By the way, the lawsuit goes on to allege that Shapley and Ziegler, the two IRS whistleblowers, targeted and sought to embarrass Biden through statements to the media. The suit clarifies that the pair of agents are only the most recent example of this alleged activity. Now, we'll see how far that goes. If I was the judge on that one, I'd say, you're lucky you're not in jail now, my friend. I'm tossing this one out.
The media didn't get caught with crack in their mouth. didn't get caught with hookers, didn't knock up some girl and refuse to pay her child support.
Yeah, he seems to think that for some reason it's not a media event when he's caught cheating on taxes and throwing guns into garbage cans that he shouldn't have gotten in the first place. Well, he's the son of the president, and with that comes some sort of decorum that you need to show.
Here's how you stay out of that. Stay out of the limelight. Stay off Air Force One, which you got no business being on. I love that one photo of him coming off Air Force One. Here comes Sleepy Joe. And then in the background, you've got Hunter Biden in a backpack he lifted from a third grader rolling off on Air Force One. I mean, it just stay out of those limelight.
Yeah, I think you're right. Absolutely right. Okay, let's take our break. When we come back, Sean Higgins of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, we're going to talk with Sean about the United Auto Workers strike. By the way, it's entered its fourth day today. How much longer is this thing going to go on? And is it forcing union workers to face some very hard realities?
When I think back on all the crap I learned in high school, it's a wonder I can think at all.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
Arbor Life Tree Service is Tampa Bay's finest tree service company. From trimming, pruning, fertilizing, and insect control to grinding and removal, you get an experienced, ISA-certified, and veteran-owned firm that can do any tree job, large or small. With our fully equipped fleet and trained crew members, we care for trees of all sizes, whether you're government, contractor, business, or homeowner. Don't trust just anyone with a chainsaw. Call Arbor Life Tree Service at 727-330-1999 for a quick and free estimate. That's 727-330-1999. Arbor Life Tree Service. They go out on a limb for you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on a Monday. Thank you so very much. So very much for being with us. So, the United Auto Workers strike at plants owned by the big three automakers. Used to be Ford, GM, and Chrysler. Now it's Ford, GM, and Stellantis. It's entering its fourth day today after the two sides were unable to come to an agreement on a new labor deal on Thursday night. And then again on Friday, and they've been talking away. About 12,000 plus, almost 13,000 union members on strike. It did officially start Friday. Three auto plants, Michigan, Ohio, and Missouri, that produce Ford Bronco, Jeep Wrangler, and the Chevy Colorado, among other models, are the ones that have been struck. This is really the first time, apparently, that the UAW has done a simultaneous strike against the big three. Well, I can't think of a better person to talk with about this whole situation than Sean Higgins of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Sean has posted a blog called "The UAW Wants a Bigger Slice of a Shrinking Pie." Sean, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
As always. Yeah, as always, it's a pleasure to have you. Well, you know, it's been a while. I can't remember the last time we've had an auto workers strike, but this one's a rather interesting one. And you mentioned that the union members apparently going after more with less to go after. Is that basically what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, part of the issue that the union workers, the union members have is UAW only represents about 40% of the cars being manufactured in the U.S. In other words, their workers are working to create about 40% of the cars that are built in the U.S. There's a whole bunch of plants now in the South, in places like Tennessee and other states, that aren't unionized, that they produce. They're built in America, but they're foreign-branded cars, like Volkswagens and Toyotas and stuff. And as a consequence, when you say the auto workers are on strike and everybody assumes that all the auto plants are idled, that's simply not true. Only about 2 out of 5 are even affected by the strike. And on top of that, they have this unusual limited strike tactic that they're using, where they're only they only have about a couple of hundred actually people literally not working instead of the 150,000 workers they actually represent, which is a very unusual and I think very telling detail that they don't actually have a very strong hand in this case.
Yeah. Now you mentioned in your in your blog that the union needs headlines to give the impression that it's still a major player in the industry, and not a corrupt, increasingly irrelevant relic. I think that's an interesting way of saying it.
Well, I mean, the current head of the UAW is Sean Fain. His two predecessors, you know, were forced out because of corruption for dealing with the management and basically screwing over their own members. The reason why Fain got elected was because the federal government, as part of one of these settlements, forced the reforms in how the union leadership is elected, and Fain got in there. But he only got in by a relatively small margin, and this is his first major action as the head of the union. So he has to sort of establish himself as a tough guy and make it look as though he's not part of the old corrupt regime and make sure he has sort of rank and file behind him. At the same time, he doesn't really have the numbers or the clout to force a full shutdown of all the auto manufacturers. So they're using this piecemeal approach, and they're trying to make a virtue out of necessity by claiming, well, it's a new, unique method we're trying, when the reality is they just don't have a strike fund large enough to sustain a very long walkout with all the members.
Yeah, it won't be like, for instance, back in the 70s,
right,
when they would do something like this. It would really put the whole car industry back on its heels. Not so much now.
Yeah, I mean, the unions and the left in general, but the unions in particular, are really good at creating a narrative and sort of selling it to reporters. And you're seeing all these sort of reports that, oh, this is a new, unique strategy. The reality is they just don't have the resources to have a full, complete work stoppage with all their members walking out and sustain that over a period of longer than 2 months, because they don't have that much money in sort of in their strike fund. To do that, and they run the risk, therefore, of the management just simply holding them out and forcing them to accept a lesser deal. So that's why they're doing it the way they can. Again, this is sort of virtue made out of necessity, and they don't have as they have to do something to make it look as though they're fighting the management and sticking up for themselves. But at the same time, they can't really sort of wrestle them to the ground the way they could in those previous decades, as you say.
Now, I read here that they're still, both sides, relatively far apart, especially on money. The UAW wants a 40% pay hike for the rank-and-file members over 4 years. And I guess the automakers have offers of about 20% over that period of time. So that does sound like... That's quite a gap, right?
It's a little there's more wiggle room there than you might think. It's increases of up, the manufacturers are offering increases of up to 20%, and maybe in a few select circumstances higher than that. The union's requesting ones, they've scaled it back a little bit. The problem is there's different pace schedules and scales based on where they're working or what particularly they do or how long they've been at the things, and that was one of the things that got them caught up in the last time they did have a big strike, which was in 2008-2009, when they had to take a haircut as a consequence of the industry almost nearly collapsing. What they basically did was they said all the new workers are going to be the ones that are going to take the heaviest burden and will protect the more experienced ones, which created this sort of problem within the union of new members were basically getting screwed over at the expense of the older members, and they obviously clearly resented that. And part of what they're trying to do is trying to sort of undo the lingering aspects of that in the current negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is one of these. This whole negotiation is one of these things where you can very quickly fall down a kind of rabbit hole of minor details, because there's a whole lot of different factors at play here. I mean, we haven't even talked about how the administration is pushing them to manufacturers to make more EV vehicles.
That
impacts everything.
That was actually going to be one of my next questions. By the way, we're talking with Sean Higgins. He's a research fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He specializes in labor issues and employment issues, so this is right up his alley. And yes, Sean, the EV issue, that a lot of the union workers, aren't they a little bit worried about switching over to EVs? Wouldn't that mean that a lot of those workers would lose their jobs?
Yes. EV vehicles require less people to make them than traditional gas-powered vehicles. They're just simpler in that regard. Also, the other issue is the batteries for the electronic vehicles. They can't be made in the same or the factories that they would make the rest of the car. So they would be produced in factories outside of this sort of Detroit Rust Belt area, or could be produced in factories outside the Detroit Rust Belt area. So one of the issues here is the UAW is trying to keep the companies from shifting workers to different factories, and that's a whole other issue that they're trying to prevent. But that's not something that they necessarily are going to be able to do very well, because the batteries have to be made if we're going to be shifting over to this. The management of the unions is sort of supposedly behind this because it's green and it's progressive, and there's been this sort of push within the union movement to sort of embrace these things. But a lot of the old line manufacturing-based unions know that this is still a bad deal for them, because it just ultimately means less workers and therefore less people that they can represent. And UAW is one of these ones that's sort of caught in the middle of this.
Then you got the president, who has sent a few of his people over there to supposedly help out in these negotiations. But I don't get the impression that the rank-and-file workers themselves are all that excited about Biden's interference, or whatever you want to call it.
They want more money, they want more assurances, they want to, stability. But they've seen how things have gone in the last couple of decades for the union and for the industry as a whole. And they've heard a lot of these type of promises in the past. And so they're, rightfully skeptical that this type of stuff is going to happen. I mean, I think a lot of them probably would be willing to accept what management is currently being offered. And that's part of the issue of why they're not doing the whole sort of full walkout in a deal.
You also mentioned in your blog that an added a problem for the union is that the credibility of the leadership itself with its members. So there is this unsettling division going on here?
Well, I mean, as I said, they've had the problem with, there's been serious corruption issues with their own leadership. I mean, the last couple of presidents prior to Bain have had major problems. They've been caught with their hand in the cookie jar, literally. And, they've the extent to which, they have control over their, the rank and file have control over their own union is a sort of long simmering issue there. They have more than they did previously because of some of the reforms in the election procedures, but still not enough. And then you still have a lot of people who were beholden to the old regime and the sort of old way of doing things, so who don't necessarily want change at the same time. I mean, these things are very sort of organic. You have a lot of people in factions within the union who have their own different viewpoints. And trying to keep everybody together has always been one of these problems. And the fundamental problem UAW has is it's just not very democratic. I mean, this was a union that was created in the 1940s, for the most part, at least as far as the auto workers are concerned, and most of them have never had a chance to sort of vote on it or had serious impact on the leadership or the rules that's been made. They've just simply been given a union card and told to get in line, and people are going to resent that, obviously.
Yeah. Well, look into your crystal ball, Sean. What do you think? How long do you think this strike's going to last?
My guess is it will last a couple of weeks. There will be some offer from management that the union will take as a sort of face-saving measure to argue that they got more out of this than they would have otherwise, and that will be the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think either side wants a big, drawn-out conflict. They know the industry. The union knows the industry is in a weakened position, a difficult position, based on the EV changeover. At the same time, they need more reassurances for their own members, or at least something that they can present to their members and claim that they've stood up for them. And once they have something like that, they can stand, they can point to, that'll probably be the end of it.
So it sounds like in the long run, it's perhaps management that might, I mean, if you were going to declare a winner in a boxing match, a split decision might go to management in this one?
Marginally, yeah, but they're in a difficult position on so many other fronts that it would more be sort of not so much a win as just a staunching the bleeding type situation.
Yeah, good point. Sean Higgins, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so very much for your very cogent description of what is going on, and I look forward to our next chat.
Thank you for having me.
As always, okay. Sean Higgins of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We're going to take our break. And when we come back, we got all kinds of things going on. Did you know that Donald Trump has been given a victory in a decision in Florida here over a proposed primary ballot rule? We will tell you all about it.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Our FreedomWorks radio show has been proud these many years to be sponsored by what I think is the best men's barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin. You'll get exactly the cut you desire and get it at the best price in Pinellas County. The staff is expert in quality haircuts, and the shop is always clean, sparkling, and attractive. And Andrew's Master Barbershop is easy to get to, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They're open Tuesdays through Saturdays, so men, call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Do you have fallen trees or damage from Hurricane Idalia? Call ArborLife Tree Service at 727-330-1999. We are a veteran-owned Florida business with an ISA-certified arborist on site to handle your tree needs. Don't trust just anyone with a chainsaw. We are licensed, insured, and have the manpower to come to your rescue today. No job too big or too small. Call us now at 727-330-1999. That's 727-330-1999. Your trees will thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Fighting soldiers from the sky. Fearless men who jump and die. Men who mean just what they say. The brave men of the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best. 100 men we'll test today, but only three win the Green Beret.
Hey, we are back here at Freedom Works. Remember Barry Sandler? Ballad of the Green Beret? Came out during the Vietnam War, during the height of the Vietnam War. It's quite a song. Emotional song for a lot of people, and we're delighted to have our buddy Angelo Ceresi with us. He's our eye in the northern sky, and we normally get right into what's going on with the political events of the day with Angelo every Monday, but we're going to pause on that for a moment and talk with Angelo about a friend of his by the name of Donnie Carson, who was a buddy of his, in fact, a relative of his, a cousin of his, and the two of them served in the Vietnam War, back around the time that that song from Barry Sandler was being sung. Apparently, Donnie, and I'll let Angelo talk a little bit about it. Apparently, he passed away just recently. Angelo, is that right?
He passed away, yes, just before last weekend.
And he might have been a victim of Agent Orange. He had a cancer, is that?
What? He had cancer in the beginning, the same time I started having trouble with the heart. And he was getting sick from it and everything like that. And then it kind of went into a remission. And then it came back with a vengeance and just destroyed his whole body inside.
Oh, wow.
He was compensated by the VA for it because it was service-related, service-connected. And he was a heavy equipment operator in Vietnam, same time I was there. And he, in fact, he came to visit me while I was out on a patrol when he came to see me.
Wow, about what year was that?
That was 1969.
Mm-hmm.
And we were there. I was at Tonsonu. He was doing fire support bases and LZs, the landing zones, working the heavy equipment operator, you know, bulldozers and all that.
Right.
Clearing out the vegetation and all that.
In fact, he served two tours, did he not?
He served two tours, yeah.
Well, he was a real proud, patriotic American, it sounds like to me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. In fact, he and I, we went to get our shots together over what they call the Seneca Army Depot. Our uncle took us over there to get our shots. And then he said, Josh stopped us off at the racetrack on the way home.
So not only was he your cousin, but he was your buddy as well.
Yes, we grew up together as kids.
Oh. And he was about 73?
73 years old, my age, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm much older than him.
I'm sorry?
I'm just a couple of months older than him. My birthday's in November. His is in February.
Well, I know that he meant a lot to you, and our condolences go out to you and, of course, to his family as well.
Thank you.
Of course. So, you know, we got that, speaking of battles, we've got the Ukraine war going on. I get the impression, I want to get your thought on that, that perhaps the Ukrainians are holding on better than everybody thought, and that the Russians running into quite a buzzsaw when it comes to trying to take over that country.
I see that, you know. Nobody thought they were going to fight like they did, and obviously they're fighting for their country, and, you know, they're succeeding in some areas, and some areas, you know, the Russians, they keep getting their munitions and everything from China and from Korea.
Right.
North Korea.
Right, you're right about that. I just read today that Russia is pulling some of its troops away from the, they have a large cotillion of troops at the Norway border, up in the Arctic region, where the border with Norway hits the border with Russia up there, and it borders the Arctic, and apparently the Russian forces have pulled back some of their troops and are going to send them into the Ukraine war. So that's kind of an interesting development. In other words, they don't seem to have enough forces right now to maintain.
But, you know, I mean, nobody is doing anything. I mean, really, I mean, Europe isn't doing anything, really, are they? Helping out?
No, I don't see much.
I mean, and just letting the Russians do whatever the heck they want.
Well, they're relying, you know, the European Union seems to be relying on the United States to fund the war for the Ukrainians.
Always has, even in World War II.
And, you know, I don't think Trump, if he was president, would allow the United States to dump that kind of money into this situation without getting some help from the
European Union?
Yeah, from the European Union and the bordering countries.
Well, to be honest with you, if Trump was president, that never would have happened.
The war.
Russia going into the Ukraine.
Yeah, I agree. And we've said that many times on the show. I don't think it would have occurred either. By the way, speaking of Trump, if I can find this situation here, did you happen to see or hear about his Meet the Press interview?
No, I didn't see that.
Well, He sat down for an interview. They have a new woman that I don't know where her name is that's taken over as the host of Meet the Press, and she really went after Donald Trump, you know, throwing all kinds of questions at him. But you know him. He's pretty good at batting back the questions, you know, when it comes to what's going on. And but she was, you know, trying to get his opinion on the others that are running against him. And of course, they brought up the many indictment charges against him. And in January 6th, he brought up the fact that he had asked Nancy Pelosi to help ahead of time, you know, to get soldiers, to get soldiers, yeah, get troops over. Now, Nancy Pelosi can't call out the National Guard, but she is the head, at that time, the majority, the House Majority Leader. She's the one that can call up soldiers for the protection of the Capitol building. It's her responsibility.
And she told him no.
Basically turned him down. That's what Trump says. He says, and he said that to this woman that's the Meet the Press host. And in fact, here's the story on it. He said that he argued that she is responsible, basically, for the problem. She and Kristen Walker is the name of the new host of the Meet the Press. He said Nancy Pelosi was in charge of security. She turned down 10,000 soldiers. If she did not turn down the soldiers, you wouldn't have had January 6th. So now I'm sure she's probably going to deny that, but it's very interesting.
The media should go immediately and investigate that.
Yeah,
you know. I mean, because he was saying that in January when they were coming up with that January 6th commission and all that.
Yeah.
And there were aides of his that said the same thing.
True.
And you know, the media, they won't follow through on it, naturally. They'll just tell you what they want you to know.
Exactly right.
And you know, now, also, you got California and all these other states, Democratic states, trying to get him off the ballot in the primary. Do you believe that?
I do not believe that they will. I think every
14th Amendment.
Yeah, they're not going to. That will easily be swept away by any legitimate court. He has a right to be on every ballot in every state.
But I mean, you see what they're trying to do.
Of course,
right?
Of course.
And then you get that other. Then you get that reporter on that 60 Minutes or whatever it was there, and saying that you know, bringing up the indictments and all this and that, you know. Instead of following through, saying what you know, these indictments are just politically motivated, right? Instead of coming up and saying, "Hey, these are politically motivated indictments," but they don't do that. You know,
we're talking with our eye in the northern sky, Angelo Ceresi, the older brother of the master barber, Andrew Ceresi. So, are things settling down as far as the illegal immigrants in Rochester area? Is there anything new on that front?
Well, they still got more coming in, and they got an agency over here asking for help.
So
I got COVID, believe it or not, my wife and I.
Oh, wow. Well, I hope it's nothing.
Not as bad as it could have been. But, they're asking for clothing and food for the illegal aliens coming into the state here.
Yeah, it sounds like New York, and especially New York City, it's like they're kind of shocked to discover that illegal immigrants are pouring in. I mean, I never heard them say very much when all of the open border situation, when they're all pouring into Texas. They didn't worry about it too much then, although they declared themselves a sanctuary, I guess it's maybe a sanctuary state.
Yeah, New York is a sanctuary state.
Yeah.
I think we may have had a drop-off here Saturday night. I'm trying to check into it. Saturday night, about 10 o'clock, we went to a place, Capone's is a big parking lot out in Clearwater. And there were four or five Clearwater police here with lights on and probably a dozen to 20 trucks with Mexican flags draped over them. And I don't know if we just missed the bus drop-off or what. I didn't get a chance to follow up on it, but something was going on. didn't look like anybody was being arrested, just like they were there for some sort of control. So I don't know.
I wonder how many here in Florida we have. We probably have more than most.
Well, you know they're getting through.
Oh, I mean, come on. Of course they are.
They're putting them on those tour buses.
And dropping them off.
Yeah, like, and you can't like tell the difference.
That's right.
Like they did here in New York. And in Rochester. I think the last drop-off they had was like 70 people. 70 people coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them were children and everything. And now they're saying that they're going to go to our schools and everything like that, you know. And, you know, naturally we're going to be paying for it, you know. And
well, now that the Democratic leaders in cities like New York and other major cities, Chicago and
Rochester, too.
Rochester, there you go. Now that they are complaining, do you think Biden's going to listen a little bit more and maybe be a little bit more interested in helping shut down the border?
He'll probably speak some stuff, but he's not going to shut down the border. Those are their votes. These are their future voters. That's what the whole thing is.
Well, that's what they think. And that's what they hope, right?
Well, when they issue them free IDs, don't they put a voter
I tell you what, I think Hispanics, we've said this before, they tend to be more, in many ways, conservative and family-oriented. I'm not so sure they've got the Democratic genes.
But doesn't your driver's license have what affiliate you are, a Democrat or a Republican?
No, they can't do that.
It doesn't have that on there?
No. I don't think so.
Mine doesn't, no.
There are places where you can just show your license, and if you're handing out licenses to illegal immigrants, one would think that they could show their license, not be a citizen, and maybe vote. That's the thing. Yeah. That's the concern.
See, the thing is that they're calling them asylum seekers, right?
Right.
They're not saying illegal aliens.
That's right.
They're not immigrants, but they are illegal aliens, and they're just using a different connotation, calling them asylum seekers.
They don't even call them immigrants. They call them migrants.
Migrants, yeah.
Migrants.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. They're
not fooling anybody.
And the media just goes along with it, calling them asylum seekers.
What was the phrase Obama gave us? Undocumented workers.
Undocumented immigrants or something like that. You almost can't say it. It's so... They're illegals, right? They're illegals. Right. That's what they are. It's always a pleasure, and again, our condolences on the loss of your cousin, Angelo.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
All right, my friend. Look forward to talking with you again soon.
I'll see you later.
All right. Angelo Ceresi, all right. We're going to take our break. When we come back, among other things in our final segment, the top 10 states with the longest emergency room waiting times.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you have fallen trees or damage from Hurricane Idalia? Call ArborLife Tree Service at 727-330-1999. We are a veteran-owned Florida business with an ISA-certified arborist on site to handle your tree needs. Don't trust just anyone with a chainsaw. We are licensed, insured, and have the manpower to come to your rescue today. No job too big or too small. Call us now at 727-330-1999. That's 727-330-1999. Your trees will thank you.
Our FreedomWorks radio show has been proud these many years to be sponsored by what I think is the best men's barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin. You'll get exactly the cut you desire and get it at the best price in Pinellas County. The staff is expert in quality haircuts, and the shop is always clean, sparkling, and attractive. And Andrew's Master Barbershop is easy to get to, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They're open Tuesdays through Saturdays, so men, call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back. Freedom Works. By the way, we're here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the great great Tam Talk Radio Network. We're on AM and FM, by the way. But if you can't listen live, Big Ed, thanks to him, you can listen to us anytime by going to our website, because Ed puts all our shows on the website, on podcast. Go to OurFreedomWorks.com, O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com, and at the top you'll see podcast. Click on it. Ed's got all the shows we've been doing, most recent show at the top, and he also gives you the guest that we have, you know, at the start of the show, and the topic of the guest, and our top 10. What more can you want in life? OurFreedomWorks.com. So, apparently Donald Trump earned a little victory here in Florida. As he tries to win the nomination for president, the Republican Party of Florida's executive board, under pressure apparently from Trump supporters, voted, this was last on Friday night, to nix a provision in its bylaws requiring any candidate that wants to be on the primary ballot in Florida to sign a loyalty pledge, as in you got a pledge that you will support whoever wins the Republican primary, even if it is not you. So they've scrapped that one. The meeting was held, I guess, in Orlando at a hotel there. And the meeting was described by those with knowledge of the gathering as contentious, because we got DeSantis and Trump both from Florida. So we're going to have a lot of that going on, right? So the pledge was adopted with little fanfare originally back in May. And DeSantis supporters urged that the board members keep the pledge, but apparently it won't be kept. So there you go. Also, the Gallup poll, and I don't know why they would need to take this poll, but a new Gallup poll shows almost 70% of Americans do not think biological men should be allowed to compete in women's sports. And all you can hear from me on that one is, no kidding, it should be even higher than that. And that's all I got to say about that.
I give him a duh.
Yeah, exactly. Now, before we get to our top 10, which is a good one, my beloved Chicago Bears came down here to Tampa and played the Bucks. And Ed, why are you, you look like the cat that swallowed the canary there. What happened in that game?
It was hot, let me tell you that.
Was it?
Yeah, the players were talking about it because it was a feels like temperature of 103.
Wow.
On the field. But you're right. Before the show, you said your Bears kind of hung in there.
Yeah, it was close until the very end.
Yeah. And then it just looked like they'd had enough, you know, the Bears. Like, let's get out of here. Mind you, we say that from the 72 degrees press box, that they'd had enough.
So what happened? But, did the quarterback for the Bears throw right to the Buccaneers guy or something?
I think it was just like, here, have it. So let's go home.
Oh, my goodness.
But, the Bears get some problems.
They do.
Yeah.
They're not good. That's their problem.
And then
they got a lot of problems.
Of course, the Rays were headed to Baltimore a four-game series. Mm-hmm. And they won the first two, and I was like, wow.
Yeah.
And then they lost the last two. So they're still two games behind.
Oh, is that right? They are two games behind Baltimore, which is in first place. And
It's almost like they're happy getting three out of four or splitting the series. I hate that phrase in sports. You can't win them all. Yes, you can. The 72 Dolphins managed to do it.
Yeah, but they only had to play about 14 games.
I know, but I'm trying to say
you're not going
to
win 162.
Is it possible? Probably not. But it's just like they're like,
sure.
I just don't like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know the phrase is a little bit frustrating.
We won two. Let's get out of here.
All right, my friend. It's time for our top 10. I think this is a good one. These are the top 10 states with the longest emergency room waiting times. Now, this data was released this summer from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, and it indicates the average emergency room visit times that was collected between October of 2021 and September 2021. 22.
There used to be a billboard around town. I don't know if it's still up or not, but it used to have the waiting time in the emergency room. And it would change. It would change, like, from 5 minutes to 7 minutes or 8 minutes.
Was the billboard outside of the emergency room?
No. No.
But it was for a particular emergency?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Well, at least you knew how long you had to wait.
I remember driving. Well, if I ever get in an accident, I know where to go.
Okay. Yeah. Well, here we go. Top 10 states, longest emergency room waits. Number 10, Pennsylvania. You wait 3 hours.
Hey.
3 hours. And this is just number 10 we're talking about. So I don't think I'll go to Pennsylvania and get hurt. Number 9, go to Connecticut. You'll wait 3 hours and 2 minutes. Number 8, we're floating around the Northeast here, Ed. New Jersey is number 8, 3 hours and 11 minutes. Number 7, we go out west, Cactus Country, Arizona. 3 hours and 13 minutes. Bring your cowboy boots.
I'm assuming if you're bleeding, you go to the head of the line.
Yeah, then you only wait 2 hours and 34 minutes. Number 6, New York. Why am I not surprised? 3 hours and 21 minutes in the Big Apple. Number 5, Biden's home state, Delaware. 3 hours and 30 minutes.
Wow.
Holy, can you imagine waiting that long? It's half a day. Number 4, Massachusetts. 3 hours and 33 minutes. Wow. Jeez. It seems like most of these are in the Northeast, you know? All right, number 3, Rhode Island. How can such a little state have such a long waiting time? 3 hours and 34 minutes in Rhode Island.
Maybe there's not enough hospitals.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Well, you only, if you get in the car on the east side, drive to the west side, it only takes you 4 minutes and 10 seconds. Okay, number 2, Maryland. Yeah, 4 hours and 2 minutes. Now we're into 4 hour range. All right, Ed, I don't know, were you listening enough? I don't think you'll get this one, but give it a go.
What section?
Let me give you a big hint. What is the most, where do you think the most screwed up group of people live?
Wow. You have to be more specific.
When you hear that, when I give you the answer, you'll know what I mean.
You have to be more specific.
Let's say, where is more money wasted in this country?
Seattle?
Well, you...
I don't know, maybe something like Baltimore.
Well, you're getting close.
Maryland.
You're getting real close.
No.
Did you ring? Did you do the drums?
Virginia.
How about Washington, D.C.?
Oh, okay.
I know it's not technically a state, so I'm going to give you a credit because you got close enough. You know how long it takes? 5 hours and 29
Golly,
minutes.
Golly, might as well just drive to Canada.
I know. 5 hours and 29 minutes. There you go. We'll give you the shortest wait times on our next show. Thanks so very much for listening to us. Be good out there, be safe, and remember, freedom works.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com. I'm Peter King. 5 Americans have just arrived in Doha hours after the Iranian government released them. The U.S. part of that deal includes the release of 5 Iranians being held here and the freeing up of some $6 billion in Iranian assets. It's Chief Foreign Correspondent Margaret Brennan.
The 5 Americans and 2 of their family members left Tehran on a Qatari plane, headed for Doha, and that is where they will finally be in U.S. custody. That is where they'll be on the tarmac for about an hour. According to what sources familiar have told me, they will be given cell phones that are U.S. government owned to be able to call their family members and they will finally be free.
In a written statement, President Biden says he's thankful for their release while demanding accountability for Bob Levinson, a retired FBI agent last seen in Iran in 2007. The president's son, Hunter, is suing the IRS, saying the two agents